statement on McLuhan's tombstone, which is, the truth will set you free.
Right.
And then mine will say, dot, 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 it's continuing. But at first, it will piss you off.
The truth will piss you off.
Yeah, I got a compliment.
And then set you free.
Hey, if I get killed tomorrow, tell Carol.
Mine will say, the truth will give you a hard on.
What? At first, it will give you a hard on.
Can we proceed?
Yeah. McLuhan offered us reflections of our time and pictures of the new human landscape. At its heart, it was a hopeful vision that said we might be able to control the enormous change that was happening to us.
To me, there isn't any gap between the man and his ideas.
Stop.
It's all one.
This is the famous documentary done in 1967 called The Telescope, CBC show. Just so you know, this is 40 years ago. And they asked her, what is he about? She goes, I don't know. Do you know?
You know, like that's her first
response. She knows how to ask questions.
Yeah.
How old is she there?
She was born a year after 1912, so she's 55.
She's 55. They met in Pasadena.
Yeah.
Right here.
In 37.
Oh, in Pasadena?
Yeah, at Pasadena
70
Playhouse.
Years ago,
this year. She's an actress.
Yeah, she's training under McLuhan's mother.
Wow. And
who was a teacher of actors.
And she's still living.
Yeah, she's very close to death, apparently, but she's still living.
Sure. Can we?
Just go back and
the man and his ideas, it's all one.
Marshall was the oldest son.
That's not necessarily true. But from her perspective, seeing him, the private self, she thinks it's all one. They are. He kept them separate. Right? But you might think, since she converted Catholicism, if you see, that helps the Catholic idea. All his ideas.
Oh, she converted too?
Yeah, shortly after he did.
Wow.
And so, but the thing is, they need her saying that. They grab it from 40 years ago.
Right.
To say, yeah, his Catholic was the same as his public. You know, they're taking, they're exploiting that statement. They think because his wife said it, she must know.
That's Eisenstein, the miracle of editing. You can do anything with editing.
Right. So just rewind a bit so we
know.
No,
every time it starts, it will get rewound.
The idea is it's all one.
Marshall was the oldest son of Herbert and Elsie McLuhan and brother to Maurice Raymond.
They were Protestants. As much as they were anything. And,
as much as they were anything. That's an interesting statement. I talked to Marshall's brother, Morris. He says there was a lot of arguing in his family.
Which is everything.
Yeah, they were Baptists, and they probably didn't like Catholics, and blah, blah, blah. And he and Marshall said, we didn't want to get involved with that arguing really level anymore. So they probably weren't fanatic religious people. As a matter of fact, his parents were Rosicrucianism and looked into fringe stuff. So that's why I think Eric's saying is, if they were anything, they were Protestants, but they weren't really Protestant. They were just secular people.
See, if you're Catholic, let me just add, growing up Catholic, if you're Baptist, you probably don't like Catholics.
Yes, yeah.
But if you're Protestant, if you're Catholics, you accept them, you just... You don't make an issue out of them. They're just poor Baptists.
Yeah,
they don't know anything.
Baptists, yeah.
they're
late,
Baptists.
Johnny come lately.
You know,
they're only 300 years
know.
Old. We're 1,800 years old.
They don't know nothing. God bless them.
God bless them. They're just new
they're
people.
They're Baptists.
The
you know,
they're poor Baptists.
They probably scream and yell and roll on the floor. What the hell are they doing in there? God.
See the condescending Catholic attitude?
That's a condescending Catholic attitude. That's exactly right. And that's exactly... McLuhan is like, I'm the thinker.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm the thinker. Like the Pope.
Yeah.
Catholic.
Yeah. And
universal.
And also Jewish by osmosis.
Yeah.
Yeah, Jewish by
that. Catholics are everything.
Yeah, just like Jews. Back. They're the same as...
Does it automatically go back?
No, I do it back.
They were Protestants, as much as they were anything. And... They weren't attached to one or another particular sect of Protestantism.
That's the father. He was a lazy salesman, did lousy, and they eventually separated.
Really?
Oh, yeah. Like he.
So he's a mama's boy.
Yes.
He's raised by mama.
So much. I mean, if you want to go into the Freudian, she was an elocutionist. So Marshall writes his thesis saying that wisdom must include eloquence. It's spouting his mother's fucking role in life. They were called elocutions. They go around and recite poetry and segments from plays, like a one-woman show kind of thing.
Did the dad get to see his son become famous?
Yeah, but he was kind of sent out. I think he died in the middle 60s, and right when McLuhan was becoming famous, and there's stories of him staying at the family at McLuhan's house and wandering off, and they had to find him. He was sent out. His secretary told me that. So yeah, I don't know what he fucking did. But he was kind of like, you know, the black sheep of the
family. They weren't attached to one or another particular sect of Protestantism.
I think growing up in a family where there was a separation of his mother and father at an early age had him questing for meaning in that space, in that area, quite early on.
Stop. First latchkey kid. Questing, looking, what's the answer? A human to film.
He found a real home. In faith.
Let's stop. You, Robin, you don't know. That's his youngest son who totally rebelled against him for fucking decades. It had nothing to do with him. And have you seen the original? Has she seen the original documentary?
He became a guitar maker.
Yeah, he became a craftsman.
But he became a pothead, then a guitar maker.
He got busted and embarrassed in the McLuhan family when he was a teenager. But anyways, the point is he recently is now talking authoritatively about his father, even though he would have nothing to do with it, and says back in 84 that he turned off his father in 1984. Father was nuts. And I won't go into the
details. Well, it's reasonable when you get older to then, you know, want to connect again and talk about it.
Yeah, the woman...
You can't begrudge him that.
The daughter who made the documentary in 84, Stephanie, was a big journalist celebrity in New York and became a coke addict. And recovering from that, her father died just around that time. She started speculating, who the hell was this guy? And started looking into it and said, holy shit, look what he wrote. Yeah, some of the kids say, the McLuhan kids, they say he wasn't a very good father because all they remember is a guy lying on the couch reading poetry. That's their experience of it. Some guy was never around, and if he was around, he'd read poetry. Mrs. McLuhan says in the Telescope documentary from 67, I think it's her, but other people said, he was in love with the idea of a family. He wasn't really a family man, but he was in love with the idea. Another performance art.
And he liked going to church every Sunday with the
every
family.
Day. Yeah, with the family.
With the family.
Yeah, yeah. And there's footage of him going along with the mother and about five little kids going along over a bridge. And Marshall's wild out like, good art. This will freak out the Bohemians assholes. I'm the biggest wacky Lewisite Bohemian. And they're going to go, why is he Catholic? And he's like, there's a fool of them. You know? No, that's what McLuhan said, that the artist had to infiltrate decent society after World War II because art was obsolete. If he had lived in 1890s, he'd be like Oscar Wilde, probably.
Yeah.
Okay, so just... rewind slightly.
In faith.
No, I want to get what he's saying. Okay.
Quite early on. So he found a real home in faith.
No, let's go back. What's early on? I mean, he's probably talking about the divorce.
Attached to one or another particular sect of Protestantism.
I think growing up in a family where there was a separation of his mother and father at an early age. Had him questing for meaning in that space, in that area, quite early on. So he found a real home in faith.
A home.
All life, mental, spiritual, physical, is governed by laws still largely unknown to human beings.
This is something written when he was 19 years old. Now listen.
Man, why is it on a vinyl?
No, that's them pretending.
Eric McLuhan is reading.
Yeah, he's they're
Eric
reading
McLuhan's
it.
Voice.
They're giving the time error with the phone and Amazon mixed in as they're fooling you. But he wrote this, and when he was 19, just starting university, he says there must be. He's predicting that he will find the laws of media. Now listen to this. That's pretty interesting.
Faith.
Life, mental, spiritual, physical, is governed by laws still largely unknown to human beings. I'm going to work out some of these great laws.
I think that McLuhan...
That's amazing how people, like they say, McLuhan used to comment on geniuses, known genius history, all made their big discoveries when they were young. So he knows he did, or was working on it when he was young. See, so that's the meaning of that. He's reflecting back on what he wrote in his diary. He's saying, I'm going to discover some of the new unknown laws. I mean, did you say that about yourself, Jerry, in 19 when you were 19?
I was just trying to get laid.
I was like, hey, you got a life?
Laws that are largely unknown to human beings. I'm going to work out some of these great laws.
I think that McLuhan, from his youth onwards, was obviously the type of individual who really felt that he had to understand. Stop. That he couldn't.
This is the first biographer of McLuhan. And the biography was a hit in 1989 and kind of put McLuhan back on the map. And so that's Philip Marchand. As a result of that, he became the book critic for Nelsenthal's newspaper, Toronto Star, Nelsenthal's family paper.
And he gets McLuhan how much percent on our awards? Like 80?
Nothing. He's terrible with McLuhan.
Oh, he gets him. Yeah, but 40. He's on the list, though. He might skip 40% or...
I don't think I put him on the list. If he is, he's way down, okay. Like 50%. Because he... But what he does, he's a propagandist for the cultural memory of McLuhan. He'll put McLuhan stuff in his articles more than any other critic did before. And so to the degree that he knows some basics of McLuhan, that's good, right?
Yeah.
He felt that he had to understand, that he couldn't simply throw up his hands. He had to come to a coherent view of
let's
life.
Go back to what
and he believes.
Okay, do you think this is true, what Phil's saying?
I'm going to work out some of these great laws.
I think that McLuhan, from his youth onwards, was obviously the type of individual who really felt that he had to understand, that he couldn't simply throw up his hands. He had to come to a coherent view of life. And he believed that there was one available.
That was probably accurate. He gets 2 degrees in Canada. Stop. Then he goes to England. His mother finagles so that he gets not a Rhodes Scholarship, but some other kind of
Cambridge.
IODE scholarship to Cambridge. And he redoes his MA and PhD, MA and BA under their system. I don't think it was they had to, but he does redo it again, BA and MA.
He and Tom Easterbrook, who was a professor here in economics, and was a great professor of economics, when he and Tom Easterbrook, they were kids together in school, or they were young students in university, but they were in a used bookstore. And both of them were rummaging through the books, and they spent a fair bit of time. And when they decided to go, nodding at each other, they came back each with a book. And the book that was held by Tom Easterbrook was called What's Wrong with the World by J.K. Chesterton.
Stop.
A great...
J.K. Chesterton. No, G.K. Chesterton.
Right. And
look at that guy. He's like,
oh, he's funny.
He was the McLuhan of the early part of British culture at the turn of the century. He was
funny,
a famous
man.
He's the
I
guy who would say things.
Him.
Oh, yeah, he was a great. McLuhan got a lot of his short, pithy, paradoxical statement style from him. He'd say, women refuse to be dictated to, like Ibsen's, what's that famous play? The Dollhouse?
Yeah.
Nora of the Dollhouse. Women refuse to be dictated to and went out and became stenographers.
That's right. And you know what?
Jerry goes, ah!
Wiki, put in G.K. Chesterton and then put in the word wiki quote, and you'll get all his.
They're fantastic.
Lives.
He said a stigma is better than a dogma. And that applies to McLuhan. He said, I don't take myself seriously. I don't take anybody seriously. I'm a satirist. That's just what he got stigmatized as, a guy who hated books. But it was better than a dogma in an information PR world. It's like bad publicity is better than good publicity.
Did you ever read this guy, Mark?
You see his quotes around. Uh-huh. That's for sure.
Now, Bob, go back just for a
second. He was a big deal.
Who's the painting by in back of
Kirkhoff?
He was a Catholic,
too. What?
In back of the Kirkhoff.
Was he all a Catholic?
Yes, yeah. And he might have been a convert. Right? He might have been a convert. But he was part of what was called the distributionist political movement. He was kind of wanting to get people back to the land and back to crafts. Another guy overreacting to the industrial disease of the end of the 19th century, first part of the 20th century.
In that green painting in back of Durkheim?
Yeah, Rene, made by Rene Serra, C-E-R-A. Oh, okay. It's called Pied Piper's All. McLuhan asked him, to make a painting showing the effects of television. And that's what he came up with.
Okay.
And it's Pied Piper's All, which is actually the digital life of YouTube. Everybody puts out their stuff trying to see if they can...
Be a Pied Piper.
Yeah, and have people follow them.
Pied Piper's
All.
All.
Like, here comes everybody.
We are all Pied Pipers?
Yeah. Okay. So just rewind slightly, just to get the...
Pied Piper's Off.
What's Wrong with the World by J.K. Chesterton.
You might want to go back and just show you the painting.
Yeah, I'm going to go smoke a cigarette.
Okay. The
great.
The spirals in the painting. You see all these Baroque spirals. Right. Can you get it?
And both of them were rummaging through the books, and they were sort of... They spent a fair bit of time. And when they decided to go, nodding at each other, they came back each with a book. And the book that was held by Tom Easterbrook was called What's Wrong with the World by J.K. Chesterton, a great English Catholic critic writer. Anyway, so this Easterbrook's got this book. What did Marshall have in his hand? Marshall had a treatise of economics of some sort. Why he picked that up, God knows. But yet anyway, they both looked at each other and that their book. I think this is more like your kind of stuff. So he exchanged the book right then and there.
Stop. And Easterbrook gets the economics book, and he becomes an economic historian, professor, student of Innes, the big influence on McLuhan in a way. And McLuhan becomes obsessed with Catholic philosophy, having read Chesterton. See? They flip on each, influence each other. So he gets a B.A. again at Cambridge University in 36. You're taping so the okay. Your tape's on?
Yeah, there. Okay, here we go.
M.A. 39. Ph.D. 42.
He would have gone to the critical questions. He would have gone to the meaning of life. He really would. I'm sure he had some basic questions that he really needed to answer. You know, the more he read Chesterton, I think the more he really felt that probably the Catholic Church was the answer.
In 1936, McLuhan
let's just go back and look at the quote by Chesterton.
First teach,
right there. People have fallen into a foolish habit of speaking of orthodoxy as something heavy, humdrum, and safe. There never was anything so perilous or so exciting as orthodoxy. Now that's sort of McLuhan-esque on a personal level. McLuhan revigorated the past.
It was the answer.
Let's go back. Just get the. Okay.
Basic questions that he really needed to answer. You know, the more he read Chesterton, I think the more he really felt that probably the Catholic Church was the answer.
In 1936, McLuhan accepted his first teaching post in the English department at the University of Wisconsin.
Now, there was another funny thing. He then began talking about matters related to the faith to his students. As an intellectual thing. And at one point, one of the students said, well, look, if you're so convinced of all this, why aren't you a Catholic? And he said, well, I didn't have an answer to that. So I turned around that afternoon and went and asked for instruction. And a few days later, a few weeks later, he was baptized and brought into the church. Baptized and confirmed on the same day.
And then he wired his mother that he was going to convert. And at the other end, the mother burst into tears and she said, you'll never be a president of a university.
You know? This guy is so stupid.
I don't understand that statement. Why wouldn't he be
okay, president? I don't know if Eric's got it right. I understood that he was in Cambridge. I mean, I don't think he'd be talking about his Catholic faith to the students. But over in Cambridge, they'd be discussing Maritain and the Catholic philosophers all the time, or at least he was. And somebody in the common room at the university said, Marshall, you're always talking about Catholic philosophy and that. Why aren't you a Catholic? And he said that he didn't have an answer to that question. There's a guy who likes to have answers, I guess, to everything or not be caught speechless. Remember on my album? Don't lose your words, Bob. Remember that part of the album? So he's the kind of guy, I guess, whose sense of ego was invested in being able to answer people's questions or keep the conversation going, and he felt uncomfortable with his silence. So he then started to look into maybe converting. But if that happened in Cambridge, and he left Cambridge in June 36, because he's going to teach in Madison, Wisconsin in the fall of 36, he does not officially convert till March 37th. That's not a few weeks. Now, when you convert, you get baptized and confirmed, right?
Right.
Okay. He didn't do it in a few weeks. But if it's true that he's saying it happened in Madison among the students, and I'm not sure, then yeah, maybe it happened in a few weeks. But
I remember in the letters, it took months for him to write to this Catholic priest in Toronto and get organized and go through the procedure. So I don't know if Eric's got that right. And then this idiot giggling guy, what did he just say there? He's laughing about how you'll never be president. You know why that is? And back in the 30s, if you were Catholic, you weren't going to get very high in the Protestant social structure.
Oh, I see.
That's
yeah,
why.
Even Kennedy, where he ran, yeah. 60, what was
60.
It? 60. Yeah, he had to overcome that he was Catholic.
Yeah. And that's in the States, and maybe it was worse than Canada, because we were more British than America, so we were more Protestant. The French were Catholic. French-Canadian. So just rewind slightly. Do you notice the empty bullshit in his vibe? Do you get that?
Oh, yeah, he's...
And Mother burst into tears and she said, "You'll never be a president of a university." You know, I was told this by Morris, his brother. Morris, who was a minister as well. I mean, there was a great deal of commitment to a faith in that family. The brother, the father, you know, I mean, it was the example was certainly there. Now, for Marshall, really the wrong faith, but anyway, you know, there was a great... So I'm quite sure that there was something of that nature as well playing into it. Marshall was received into the Catholic Church in Wisconsin, March 24th, 1937.
And he decided either this is the biggest hoax, and I'd better sort that out right away, so I can get on with my life. It's the biggest hoax ever perpetrated, or it's true. And if it's true, then I darn well better pay attention to it. And he discovered very quickly, he told me, there's only one way to test the faith, and that was on your knees. And I said, please send me a sign, any kind of a sign, just something to give me an indication of genuineness. He kept at that for a while, and then he said it was like suddenly the floodgates opened. Everywhere he looked, he got answers.
Once he accepted Catholicism, and this...
Well, we don't know what sign he got. He got... Send me signs.
When it's open, it sounds like, Bob, I saw 22 everywhere.
Like me, I'm known as the ripoff of the Church of Jesus. That's a stigma. I'm a G.K. Chestonian. Yes, a stigma is way better than a dogma, boys. I need as much bad publicity. I killed Kennedy. I'm trying to pile it up. I'm going to out-stigmatize Terry Bundy, Charles Manson. I killed Walter Bard. I killed Scott after he taped all my shit. You know, that's building up your stigma potential.
I got to keep taping his shit for a long time now. Yeah, so I don't get killed.
That's right. You're like Scheherazade, who had to keep telling the guy, the Arab, the sheik, that stories because yeah. She ran out of them and she got killed. So, but no, what was it he just said? Yes, I think Eric. I don't know where it comes from, but like Eric says that he got, like he said, he looked for a sign and he got a sign, and that's like the punchline story. He got a sign. Well, what was the fucking sign, Eric? You know, I never had a chance to ask him, but somebody should ask him, what sign? Right. But this is like a variation of that. The floodgates open. That's right, he gets fucking synchrony or synchronicity.
Hey, we're going to split. Okay. I gotta get up early tomorrow.
All righty, you're gonna.
I gotta sneak.
You're flying. You're driving,
Scott,
right?
It's a pleasure to meet you.
Nice to meet you. What a pleasure, Robin. Mark, so good to see you again.
Yeah,
see
you guys are gonna hook up and make a little
good
movie.
To see you,
oh, man. We
yeah.
Got so how many years have been talking about? You got all my numbers, or you?
Yeah, I got it.
Cool.
Yeah.
It'd be great to see you again, man, and just do the gamble.